All right, welcome back, everyone, to another episode of Timeout Talk. We're your hosts, Raphael Singer
and Hunter Leon.
And we have a lot to talk about today, so let's just jump right into it. So the first topic I kind of want to talk about today is Russell Westbrook tying Oscar Robertson's record for career triple-doubles. So he's now tied for most triple-doubles, and I just wanted to get your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I mean, I think he did it in a really I wouldn't say flashy, but he did it with a bang. He had a game where he had a 30-15-15 game, and then he had two back-to-back triple-double games with 15 assists and 15 boards, or over that, and nobody else has actually done that in history. So he is definitely a player that I feel like in our time now, like, we don't appreciate enough of what he does. He's somebody who will look back on and be like, wow, we have not seen anybody like this for a very long time, and we won't see somebody like this again. Yes, there's the people who are going to get your triple doubles every once in a while. I mean, you have guys like Luka, you have guys like, even Lonzo has gotten some triple doubles every now and then, but there really isn't a guy who you have to go into the game expecting him every night to be able to get that triple double.
Right. And I just have to agree with you. I think that he did it in an incredible fashion. I think that Oscar Robertson's record was one of those records where everyone sort of looked at it as unbreakable. You know, it was just like, oh, no one's ever going to surpass that. But somehow Russ was able to do that. And for as much criticism as I gave him last episode,
I was going to say, so suddenly you're a big Russell Westbrook fan, huh?
Quad greatness. You know, he's really reinvented how we think about triple doubles. He's made it look easy. And I just have to commend him and applaud him. You know, in that last game where he tied the record, he was just made so many winning plays, you know, like towards the end of the game in OT, he got he made the game winning free throws and then blocked the potentially game winning shot from the Pacers. So not only is he putting up tremendous numbers and like going to be breaking this record probably, but the Wizards are winning a lot and they're now firmly in the play-in picture. So, you know, as much as I'd like to criticize Russ and say Dame is better, like, obviously all time Russ is better. And I think this is just another notch in his achievement
book. Yeah. I mean, and not only that, in that game, Bradley Beal did go down, and it was a game where they overtook the Pacers for that 9 seed, I believe.
Yeah.
So they're just solidly in this new picture. I mean, think about where they'd be 2 years ago if they were in this 9 seed. Nobody would really care like what the Wizards were doing. They'd be like, oh, there's 4 games left in the season. They can't really do much. Maybe they can make a push, but it's unlikely. As opposed to this year where I think it's a lot more exciting to see, which we'll touch on later. But right. I think another important topic I wanted to talk about.
Yeah, before we talk about it, I just
want to say
that it's looking like this hamstring injury that Bradley Beal got during that Pacers game might sideline him for the rest of the season. So we're going to have to see Russ elevate this team to another level. You know, without Beal, he's going to have to take an even larger role, and he's going to be having to put up even more numbers and just really pushing this team even harder. So that's going to be exciting to see. And I just honestly can't wait for the playing games. They're going to be so exciting.
Yeah, I think he's going to have to dish the ball a lot because, I mean, obviously – you can only score so many points in the game consistently every night. But you even saw really last night how much Russell Westbrook was just feeding his guys and making everybody around him better. I mean, that's something I feel like people don't give credit to Russell Westbrook for, which is a lot of time people say, you know, he's stat padded, whatever. You know, he's done the stuff in the past. Yes, he has stat padded and maybe got that last rebound or that last assist. But overall, he makes that guy next to him look really good. I mean, think of guys like a Steven Adams. He looked so good in OKC when he was playing with guys like Chris Paul and Russell Westbrook. And now on the Pelicans, you don't really appreciate him because, I mean, he's just not in a great role for him. And it just shows the greatness of a guy like Russell Westbrook to be able to elevate people like that.
Yeah, he's really made this Wizards roster, which – has a lot of people that you look at on paper and you're like, this is a team contending for the 9 seed. Like, they're starting Jerome Robinson sometimes. That should not be a team that's even remotely close to the playoffs. And yet they're fighting pretty hard for that last 8-9 spot, you know? So
yeah, I mean, but they do have what I'd consider a top 3 or 4 backcourt in the league.
Honestly, I've seen some arguments that they are the best backcourt in the league. What do you think of that argument?
Oh, I don't know. I've still have to give it. I mean, this year you can't call Clay part of the Splash Brothers. So I guess they do go out of the picture, but when they're healthy, they're the number one. And then but let's just take them out of the picture since they're not here.
Yeah,
I'd have to give it number one, James Harden and Kyrie Irving, even if they're not playing together, just because of who they are, they're number one backcourt.
Right. I honestly, like, James Harden hasn't played in so long. I honestly forgot about that.
Yeah, it doesn't even matter, though. It's undisputed. I think even when they did play together in their very minimal time, James Harden and Kyrie Irving were both able to do their thing, like, side by side, which a lot of people weren't really expecting. And I feel like a lot of that is James Harden's role being a facilitator, and he really, I guess, took that task of being the guy to, like, not have an inflated ego coming into this team.
Yeah.
And then I guess I'd have to give it to Dame and CJ for number two.
Above Westbrook?
Yeah, currently. I mean, I agree with you that we're kind of a roll switch here from last episode, but I'll give it to Dame and CJ. And a lot of that might come from the cohesiveness of them playing together for a long time.
Yeah.
But I do believe that overall, I'd take those two over Damon West, or not Damon Westbrook. That would be a crazy backcourt. But Russ and Beal.
And then
I'd give it to Russ and Beal for three.
Yeah, I have to agree with you there. I think that, you know, you touched on their cohesiveness. They just have this chemistry together, Damon, CJ. And when one player isn't playing well, the other steps up. And when in those late game, fourth quarter situations, they always seem to play off each other really well and make big time shots. So,
and I think I'd say right behind them is probably like Elfrid Payton and RJ Barrett.
Hey, they beat the Clippers today. So
they did. And as we speak, Karl Anthony Towns is really going off for his mom.
That's good to hear.
Yeah. So anyway, moving on to what I was talking about earlier, another guard related topic is Steph's pace in three-point land. He's averaging 5.4 three-pointers made per game, which is 0.3 attempts or made higher than his season where he made over 400. So he's actually on pace in a normal season to get 440 three-pointers, which is basically crushing his old record. So how do you feel about that, or initial thoughts?
That just sort of confirms what I had thought, or what I have been thinking, that this season that Steph is putting on right now individually is better than his 2016 unanimous MVP season. You know, like, he's putting up ridiculous numbers. Like you said, like, he's on paper, the numbers are actually better than his 2016 season. He just, like, you look at his stat lines, some games, they seem like video game numbers. He's putting up 49 points in 29 minutes on 11 made threes. That shouldn't even be possible, you know? Every team in the league knows exactly what Steph is going to be doing, you know? He's going to be running off ball. He's going to have that two-man game with Draymond. He's going to be pulling from logo land and just shooting from deep. And yet he still puts up these ridiculous numbers, still has made, like, I saw this stat. He's, like, has more games with 11 made threes this season than, like, everyone, basically. So, like, Steph is just on another level. And
wait, do you mean, like, in total in NBA history, or, like, just this year?
I think in NBA history, like, it's not even close, you know, like, but also this season, he's made more 11 made threes than everyone, you know?
No, I mean, this season, has he made more than everyone in history, or just this year? Probably just this year, right?
I think it's like, no, I think it's actually like everyone in history. Because think about it. Players have games with 11 plus made threes, right? Going to have like games, one of those, like Harden probably having a couple of those, Beal maybe, but like, Steph is just on another level when it comes.
Pretty much nobody in past history is going to have that. Maybe Clay, you get one. I mean, Clay, but I mean, like, guys from like the 2000s and the 90s and stuff. Maybe you'll have one Ray Allen game, maybe one Kobe, one Kyle Korver, like some of those guys who can just get hot. But I don't think any of those guys would have more than maybe one or two.
Yeah, but I think Steph has something ridiculous, like 10 plus.
It's yeah. Amazing. So I just think, I mean, like you said, this confirms how we feel about Steph, like just as an incredible player. We have to appreciate what he's showing us. But I don't think even then that makes him in the MVP conversation simply because of his team's record. Like,
weren't you arguing a couple episodes ago that he should be in the MVP conversation?
Sorry, what?
Weren't you arguing a couple episodes ago that he should be in the MVP conversation?
Hey, man, I just gotta make things a little interesting.
Okay, playing devil's advocate. I respect it.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, this is coming from the guy who just last episode was talking mad smack about Russell Westbrook.
Okay, I still hold by that in the past like three seasons, I would take Damian Lillard over Russell Westbrook. Obviously, all time, that's different, but current, like in these past three seasons, I'm still sticking with that.
Okay, that's fair.
So moving on, I just wanted to talk about how, you know, these last few games of the season usually are pretty uneventful. You know, maybe you'll have a couple teams who are borderline playoff teams and they're fighting for that last spot or those last two spots, or maybe teams in like the 4-5 range fighting for seeding and home court advantage. But typically this is where the season starts to like mellow out a little bit. You know, you're getting ready for the playoffs. That's where it starts to get exciting, but typically no one pays that much attention. But this season, that's very different. You know, every game feels way more meaningful. Teams are fighting for those play-in spots. And there's just this unusual sense of excitement. So I just wanted your opinion on that. What do you think about this, and how big of a role is the play-in tournament in sort of factoring into this?
The play-in tournament is everything in this. I mean, I think a lot of people have touched on this throughout the NBA. A lot of executives, a lot of commentators have really talked about how just this has become a really interesting time of year. I mean, a big problem the NBA has is like usually, you know, sales and like ratings are usually at a pretty steady level throughout the season. Maybe you'll have a few up times, maybe a few down, but the end of the season is definitely where viewership falls off because people are like, oh, whatever, I know where my team is standing, and they're getting ready to binge watch the playoffs if they're really into basketball. So I think this has made it so that people are interested in watching these games, and the players are also interested in winning these games. A lot of the times players don't really care because they're like, oh, we have a good three-win cushion on the next seed, or teams have just completely given up. But I think this creates a much larger window for teams who really care about winning.
I agree. I think that typically if you're a team who's the 11th seed, you have nothing to do except lose at the end of the season. You know, like, you're not going to be in the playoffs from the 11th seed with like five games remaining. But with the addition of the play-in tournament and the fact that basically all the way up to the 10th seed has a chance now, it's made 22 teams competitive instead of just 16. So I really like the playing game. I don't know about you, I cannot wait to watch these do or die elimination games to get into the playoffs. I think they're going to be so exciting, high intensity, and I'm really looking forward to that. And this just made me think of something. So I recently have been paying attention to the Oklahoma City Thunder and how they're just on like a ridiculous losing streak, right? They're tanking super hard and like rightly so, right? But that just made me think, like, if you're an Oklahoma City fan, you have no reason to be watching your team this season. If you're like a casual fan, obviously the more hardcore fans are going to be watching to see, you know, Lou Dort's development or Darius Bazley's growth as a scorer, stuff like that. But if you're a casual fan who just likes to put on the local team game and just watch like a competitive game, you have no reason to watch. So do you think the NBA should do something about tanking and to prevent that from happening?
I mean, there's only so much they can really do. I mean, when you decide to put together a team that just has no talent really, or a team where that's injured, because you do have talent on that roster, like guys like Shea and Lou Dort, But when those guys aren't giving it their all or they're not even in the game, that gives even less motivation for fans. But that's not really anybody's fault that Shea has been out for a while. And like, I don't,
for example,
I don't blame the Thunder for doing what they're doing. I mean, you have player or teams and people in the past, like Mark Cuban openly stated, I want a tank or whatever. Like, that should not be okay. But if a team is just strategizing their team to not be good to their advantage for good draft picks, I don't really see a problem with it. I mean, it's not like their viewership would have been that great anyway, even if they were like a few seeds higher, because even if they weren't tanking, they wouldn't even be in the playoff picture. It also doesn't help that within the next few games, they play the Kings another two times, who they just played three games ago. So that's three Kings games in five games. And then they play the Jazz and the Clippers, who are two teams who are going to blow them out probably. Like, so as a fan, that's not very exciting.
I see what you're saying. However, like, I would disagree with the statement that they're not explicitly tanking. The team is just bad and they're dealing with injuries. I mean, they are resting Al Horford for the rest of the season. They made that decision months ago for like this just arbitrary reason. It's pretty clearly because they don't want to be winning games. They want to be losing games.
Well, and I mean, Al Horford was even resting games throughout the season. Even if they're deciding to rest him for these last few games, you can't necessarily say that's because they don't want to win games. Yes, that's probably a part of it, but they rested him throughout the regular season.
Right, but that's just because he's an old player and he takes more rest. But when they sit him, when they say he's not going to be playing the rest of the season, that's not for any sort of medical reasons. That's not for any sort of, I don't know, contractual reasons. I don't know what other reasons you can think of, but it's pretty clearly because they don't want to be winning games. They want to be giving that time to younger players like Moses Brown to try and develop them, and also to lose games to get a higher draft stock.
Well, exactly. You pointed out that they're trying to develop their players. That's a whole nother reason. As a team, you want to give your young guys as much floor time as possible to have them understand how a basketball game is really working, like in the NBA. So how are you supposed to develop your players, even if they're not very good? You see the potential in that player to be good. How is it fair to say that you're going to require or fine the team for not playing Al Horford if they're trying to develop their younger players? Like, that's just like pretty conflicting argument. Like, I don't really know how you solve that.
I'm not saying that the NBA should like fine them or whatever. I just think that the way the NBA is structured, there's a legitimate reason to make your team really bad for several seasons in order to eventually win. And I think that while that is like an effective method to develop a winning team, see the 76ers for that, I think that it is not very good for fans and hurts viewership, because no one likes to watch their team at the bottom of the standings year after year after year in hopes of eventually winning much later down the line.
Yeah, I understand what you mean, but some teams are just downright bad. I mean, that's plain and simple. Even if they try, in the past, you've seen teams like the Knicks, who have been a shock this year. I mean, you've seen them be awful for the past who knows how long since Carmelo Anthony left. And when they were just not even necessarily tanking, but just really crappy, nobody cared. Even if they got worse viewership than typical, they're in a big market, so they're still going to get views. But they might get better views in the season like this year than they would in previous years. I mean, you got a team like the Timberwolves, who's just like not a good team, historically not a good team. Some of those teams just exist in the NBA, and I don't think you can really solve any of those problems by, like, I guess, restricting minutes on young guys or doing something about it. I don't think there's any way to make that happen. And if you want to make the team exciting for the future, the best way to do that is to develop your young guys.
I see. I guess I would just disagree with the fact that, like, yes, there are teams that suck, but then there are also teams that were made to suck, intentionally to tank to get better draft picks. Like, those 76er teams in the mid-2010s were absolutely terrible on purpose, you know, so that they could get picks, so then they can get Ben Simmons, so then they can get Joel Embiid, so then they can get Jahlil Okafor, but we don't talk about him.
So are you saying that the NBA should do something about that? Like, what would you suggest the NBA does to prevent that, because I don't think that's, even if it lowers viewership, I think that's something that will eventually increase viewership over time.
I don't know. Maybe, I mean, I'm just like spitballing off the top of the head. Maybe like some sort of loser tournament for the teams that didn't make the playoffs for the number one overall pick or something like that, you know? So that your team.
That's kind of interesting. I have never heard that before. Right? Is that something you just came up with?
Yeah, I just thought of that.
Yeah, like, I don't know, because I feel like that reward of the losing teams, that still rewards, of the lottery teams, that just rewards the good teams of the lottery teams. So that means the really bottom of the barrel teams who just happen to suck are kind of left in the dust.
Maybe, yeah. I mean, I haven't really thought of it. Maybe you could do something with how you seed the tournament or like the amount of wins you need. Like if you're, say, I don't know, what would it be? The 11th seed and you're playing the 15th seed, like you would need to win twice and the 15th seed would need to win once or something like that. You know, advantage the teams that suck the most. But if you're a team like the Oklahoma City Thunder, you don't want to be the worst possible team because you want to be competitive in this tournament to get the better draft
pick. Yeah, but what would you do in the case of like a team like, let's say, last year's Warriors, where Steph Curry was injured, but hey, Steph Curry's ready to play for this tournament and now they win?
Well, I mean, that's a decision they have to make. Like, they could do it. I mean,
so you're saying a team could willingly tank or leave out, like, rest a star to just try to get the number one draft pick in a year? Because that's what teams would definitely do. Some teams with one injured player who, like, got injured halfway through the season or quarter way through the season, but he's healthy by, like, maybe the 80% mark of the season, they're gonna be like, oh, wait, let's just hold you off so we can see how this tournament goes.
Maybe. I haven't really thought through all the logistical elements like that and whether it's like whether it's, you know, people could abuse it. But I'm just saying, I think there could be alternate ways the NBA could structure the way it, you know, deals with the lottery.
Yeah, maybe next podcast we should come back with a flushed out version of this yeah. Loser tournament.
Yeah, I'll definitely put some more thought into it. Anyways, moving on. I wanted to talk about the other game that was played today. We talked about the Knicks and the Clippers and how the Knicks did beat the Clippers. Shout out to Reggie Bullock. He had a great game. Former Laker, by the way.
Former Laker for 6 months.
he's still wrapped the purple and gold, so we got to give him credit. The Heat did beat the Celtics. The Celtics were making like a late game push, and it got kind of close, but the Heat did run away with it at the end.
I mean, the Heat were dominant throughout the game, so the box score doesn't really tell you how the game went.
I mean, no, there was a moment, and I mean, in my opinion, at least, like where the Celtics really were coming back. I think they got it to like within eight or something, within eight.
Yeah, but I think throughout most of the game is what I mean. I don't mean by like the end.
Definitely, yeah, for sure. The Heat were in firm control of the game, but that was actually a really big game for seeding because, as it stands right now, the Heat are the sixth seed, Celtics are the seventh seed, and so that was a really important game for seeding. What did that game reveal to you about either of these teams? Did it tell you anything you didn't know?
I think it told me something about mainly the Celtics, because the Heat were a proven team last year, obviously got to the finals. We know what the Heat are made of, and it's even scarier that they haven't even been playing with Victor Oladipo because he's been injured. But talking about the Celtics, Kemba Walker has been really on a hot streak lately. He's been averaging, I think, like 28 points per game in the past five games, and he's been looking like himself. But to see them still lose and to see the other guys not step up just shows me that something we've talked about is just inherently wrong with this team. And it's nothing I can really point a finger at. It's not like I can say the coaching staff has done something wrong. Like, not even the structure of this team seems bad.
I can point to one thing.
What, the leadership issue?
No, for me, it's the big man, you know, the center position.
Their center position is lacking, but that should be made up for at least a little bit by some of these really talented wing players and guards.
Sure, but I think, if anything, the Clippers last year showed you that not having a strong defensive anchor or just a big man in general is going to come to bite you in the playoffs, you know? You're going to have, what, Tristan Thompson trying to guard Bam Adebayo or Joel Embiid? You're going to try to have Luke Kornet on one of those players? I don't think so. I think that in the offseason, they really did blunder not going for a better big man or even at the trade deadline.
Or at least re-signing Enes Kanter.
Right. I mean, he's not going to provide any defense, obviously.
No, but he's still a big man. He's still a presence. Even if he's not a very good presence, he's there.
Yeah. Fair enough. Yeah. So that's the biggest thing for me. And I think this game sort of showcased it. You know, Bam Adebayo, easily a top five center in the NBA right now. And he just
sort defensive of player of the year conversation for him.
You think so?
Oh yeah, he is. He's leading the race. Is not leading like number one, but he's top three right now.
Yeah, definitely top five. I don't know. I don't think he is better than Rudy Gobert or even Ben Simmons, maybe. But
no, right now the race goes Ben Simmons, Rudy Gobert, and then Bam. Okay.
I got you. Yeah. So that's what this win showed for me, that the Celtics just have a void at the big man role.
Yeah, I agree. But talking about, I guess, what would be the Heat and the Celtics, I want to talk about the general playoff picture because these are two teams that were competing for playoff spots. I kind of want to break down, I guess, the first round, like what the seeding looks like and how teams match up against each other.
Sure.
So I guess to start, let's start in the West. You have – let's start with the play-in tournament because, you know, that's how it's going to go. Right now you have the 7-seed Los Angeles Lakers facing off against the 10-seed San Antonio Spurs. So this is one that Rafa and I are a little biased in.
I think it would be, wouldn't it be the Lakers Warriors? I think that's how the play
is. Wait, sorry, is it 7-8 or is it not? No. Is it 7-8? Okay. Oh, is it 7-8 compete for the 7-seed and 9-10 compete for the 8-seed?
9-10. The winner of the 9-10 game plays the loser of the 7-8 game.
Okay. Sorry. I didn't even understand. Okay. That makes way more sense than what I thought.
Yeah. You would think the NBA would do a better job of explaining this thing, but they have been sort of, they haven't really explained how the play-in tournament actually works.
But. Okay. So let's start with that. The Los Angeles Lakers versus the Golden State Warriors, the 7th seed versus the 8th seed. I think that, or actually I'll start with you. What do you think?
Well, first of all, I want to say that this would probably be like one of the highest rated games of the entire season. You know, LeBron versus Curry in the first, like not even the first round, but the play-in game. That would be ridiculous. I think this game would be a lot of fun. You know, I think Curry would really go off, even though he doesn't typically go off against the Lakers. I think he would put up some big numbers. I expect the Lakers to win that one, like 20 points, you know. I think that the Lakers are by far the better team, and one player can't really propel them that far in a high intensity situation like this. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree. I don't think there's too much to really discuss there. I think Lakers have too much veteran presence, star power, role players. I mean, the Warriors definitely have a lot of heart and they'll put a lot of energy and effort on the floor, but they just can't compete because the Lakers are not a 7-seed. Let's be serious. Yeah. The Lakers are a 3-seed or 4-seed with this roster.
Right.
I wouldn't give them the one or the 2-seed because they have not played like that whatsoever. But a healthy Lakers squad who's cohesive is a good 3-seed.
Yeah, and even if they're not cohesive, even if they're playing on like an off game, I think a game where LeBron and AD are off and the Lakers are not really gelling that well are still better than the Warriors on their best day.
Yeah, I'd agree with you. I mean, maybe not their best day, but definitely a day where they're looking good.
Sure.
So moving on from there, let's go to the Memphis Grizzlies versus the San Antonio Spurs, 9-10.
Okay, so
this is interesting.
This is going to be one of the Lakers Warriors was going to be one of the highest rated games. I don't think anyone is going to be watching this game, to be honest.
Yeah, I don't think anybody really cares. I think that John Morant's been pretty disappointing this year, even though he is coming off of injury, so you can't really blame him for it. But Jonas Valanciunas has definitely had a bigger role than him on this team.
Whoa, 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 whoa. Did you say Jonas Valanciunas has a bigger role than Ja Morant on the Grizzlies?
No, not sorry, not Ja Morant. I meant Jaren Jackson Jr.
Oh, okay.
I apologize.
I was about to say, I was like, have you been watching the
I misspoke.
Okay,
yeah, so Jaren Jackson Jr., I feel he has been disappointing this year. Ja Morant, on the other hand, I can't say has been disappointing, but he is coming off of injury, or was injured throughout the season.
Yeah.
So this is a pretty tough matchup. I think the Spurs, you know, obviously you got Pop and a really solid young core. I mean, this is would be an interesting battle, and I personally think the Spurs would win.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just going to go for the Grizzlies for, you know, devil's advocate for...
I don't think there's much to talk about here. This is one that could go either way, so it's like...
This is just a coin flip.
All right.
Both, these teams are both really in the same position, like very solid young cores, nice young point guards and DeJounte Murray and Ja Morant, you know. But I don't think that even if the winner of this game will probably lose to the Warriors, in my opinion. And
yeah, I agree. No matter what happens, the Warriors at least become the 8 seed.
Yeah, and even if the Warriors lose and one of these teams makes it to the 8 seed, like they're just gonna get swept. So not much to talk about there.
Yeah. So then let's just go straight into the actual playoff picture. You have the 1 versus 8 seed, the Warriors versus the Jazz. This is one we actually talked about in the previous episode, I remember.
Yeah.
And I said this is one where I could look at it and I could see an upset crazy enough, but it's not likely. It's not going to happen. No matter how much I want to see it, it's a 5-game series.
Max, if that, I bet it's just 4 games. Because
I say 5. I think Steph can push 1 game. Steph can get hot on 1 game and push it. No, but he'll get the double teams. He'll get whatever happens. No matter who the Warriors are playing against, the objective is going to be throw as many people as you can at Steph Curry, because you'll take the Andrew Wiggins three-pointer over the Steph Curry three-pointer any day.
Yeah, so we'll take the Hans Toscano Anderson three-pointer over.
JTA, according to the Warriors fans.
Yeah, I will say, though, that one question mark about the Jazz is just general health. You know, Donovan Mitchell has been out for an extended period.
A while.
Yeah, Mike Conley's, they've been very cautious with him. You know, they've been sitting him out for like 5 games now, at least. And I know because I have him in fantasy, and that's been hurting me.
Yeah, and although they are a 1 seed, I think that could end up hurting them, considering that they aren't necessarily like the superstar power team that a 1 seed typically is. They're more so a cohesive unit with an all-star and maybe a second. I mean, they do have 3 all-stars, like by technical term, but they really have 1 all-star, 1 really good defensive specialist, and 1 veteran presence in Mike Conley. And then they also have a lot of specialist veteran players and role players, but they don't have the guy or the 2 guys that no matter what team you are, you want to go after that player, and you know that they're going to win you the game no matter what happens.
Hey, I mean, they also do a 6-man of the year, though.
Yeah, they do. But that's what I mean in the sense that they don't have like a
3-point shooter and percentage in Joe Ingles.
Yeah, they do. That's what I mean. Like, they're a solid team. Like, to me, they're like a Atlanta Hawks kind of, you know, like the 2018 Atlanta Hawks. Like, that's what it reminds me of.
Respectful to make that comparison. I don't think anyone on that team was even remotely as good as Donovan Mitchell.
No, I think it's that Hawks team with a better like star power. Like, I think the Utah Jazz are better, but I think it's like a fair comparison to say like the type of roster, like as the construction of the roster is comparable.
I also think it's comparable in the sense that, you know, they're the 1 seed and people have very high expectations for them just to get dismantled by LeBron in the conference finals.
Yeah, I mean, let's go move into the second bracket, which would be the Phoenix Suns versus the Los Angeles Lakers. And this is one that I think would be really interesting because you have Chris Paul versus LeBron.
That's going to be crazy. The first time they're ever meeting in the playoffs.
Yeah. And that's a hard fought one, honestly. I don't know.
We'll be getting a preview of that in like 35 minutes.
We will, in which without 4 of the Lakers players, no Kyle Kuzma, no Talen Horton Tucker, no LeBron James, no Dennis Schroeder. So that's going to be a blowout. But
I think the Lakers are going to battle.
Lakers will try, but no chance. So, anyway, the Phoenix Suns versus the Lakers. I think this is a series that goes to at least six, and it's hard fought. I could see it going either way simply because the Lakers, like, disunity. But because of my bias, I'll give it to the Lakers.
Yeah, I have to go with the Lakers too here. I just think that, look, every time I've counted out or doubted LeBron James, he's proven me wrong and surpassed all my expectations. So
last year, you had everybody was talking smack about the Lakers in the bubble. They won the championship.
Yeah,
I mean, 2016, you know, comes back 3-1. 2018, people thought he was going to go out in the first round. Every year that somebody's doubted him, he's really fired back. So
except for 2011, but that was a long time.
We don't talk about 2011.
I think that just in terms of star power, the Lakers are better. And if we're firing on all cylinders, we can beat the Suns, you know, like, and I think if we beat them, people are not going to look at this series as some crazy upset because, as you said, the Lakers are not your typical seven seed.
That's really honestly could be a very easy conference finals matchup. Like Suns Lakers is an easy conference finals matchup.
Right. So,
okay. Yeah, so
it's going to be one of the best first round matchups. Actually, yeah, no, for sure. For sure.
I wouldn't say the best, but I'd say they're definitely one of the best because next one we're going to get into isn't the best, but after that, the 4-5 is going to be really fun to watch. But the Clippers versus the Trailblazers would be the 3 versus the 6. What do you think of that?
I think the Clippers would win that pretty handily in 5. I think that the Clippers are a really bad matchup for the Trailblazers. I think they would much rather have the Nuggets. I think that every single time they've played in the regular season, I think it was a series sweep. Don't quote me on that, but you know, they don't really have anyone to guard Kawhi or Paul George. They do have like Rocco and Derrick Jones Jr., I guess, or Norman Powell, who like plays way more than DJJ. But I just don't think matchup wise, this is a very good matchup for the Blazers. What do you
think? I agree with you. I think this is just has to do with matchups partially, but also the Clippers are just a superior team, especially with the addition of a guy like Rondo. That just elevates their team, which is really scary to think about because he's a player who, no matter what situation he's in, he'll give you a double-double in the playoffs with assists just because he can. Right. I mean, like, you can, on any given night, everybody in the NBA knows that Rajon Rondo is not something to mess with in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. But aside from that, like you said, nobody's going to really be able to guard Chris Paul, Paul George and Kawhi Leonard. And even if just Robert Covington has his A game on defense, he can't guard both of them.
Exactly.
Plain and simple. And at the same time, Kawhi and Paul George can guard Dame and CJ. Right. They can do that. While
I think that the Clippers are good enough with their team defense. You know, don't forget about Patrick Beverley, Serge Ibaka, who hopefully will be back by the playoffs. But yeah, the Clippers are such a great defensive team that I think that they're really going to give the Trailblazers problems.
Okay, so then moving on to the 4-5. This is going to be a fun one. The Denver Nuggets versus the Dallas Mavericks.
This is a good one because on the one hand, you want to say the Nuggets, you know, you want to say like Jokic is just going to propel them to the next round. But without Jamal Murray, they have been playing well in the regular season, but come playoff time, I think they're going to really miss Jamal Murray's shot-making ability and big time, just the way he's able to take those big time moments, like in the late game of playoffs. And you have Luka, you know, who we saw last year, how he played in the playoffs. He was tremendous. And I think this Mavs team is better than that Mavs team. So, I don't know. This one is really, like, I would not be surprised if it goes either way. I think this one is definitely going to go to 6 or 7. And honestly, I think it's hard. If you pick the Nuggets, you're going to, like, I don't want to count out Luka. But then if you go on the other hand, it's like, I don't want to count out Jokic. So, I guess I'll go with the Mavericks. That's just what my gut's telling me. But I would not be shocked if the Nuggets walk away with this.
I actually disagree with you. I think the Nuggets take this one. It's a close one. I say 6 or 7 games again.
Yeah.
But I think this is hard fought. I just trust Jokic to really get you a bucket, and I don't think they really have anybody who's capability of stopping or guarding Jokic, really. I think KP has been really disappointing this year. He's been injured constantly, and he's just not living up to his expectations, unfortunately. So the Mavericks really need to figure out something with him quickly. And I think we'll touch on the Mavericks a little later if we still have time in this episode. But going back to just the Nuggets, I think their roster is constructed better for a playoff push. Even without Jamal Murray, they still have a guy like Jokic. I mean, he just can't count them out. And then they also have Aaron Gordon. They have Michael Porter Jr., who's really stepped up this year. I mean, getting you 18 points plus since Jamal Murray has gone down. And I think even though Jamal Murray isn't playing, he's a very energetic guy, and he'll be there with his teammates, providing a lot of energy off the bench and just making sure everybody knows they have to like try their hardest and just really push, because they know what they did last year and they can repeat that.
Well, I see what you're saying, and I could buy that. You know, like, I could definitely see the Nuggets winning this. And I think you're right. The Mavs really don't have anyone to guard Jokic. But I mean, no one does, you know, like, you can't guard Jokic. He's one of the most unguardable players. And I think that his playmaking is really going to give the Mavs problems. Like, Luka is sort of the same way, you know, no one's going to be able to guard him, and his playmaking is going to open up opportunities for his teammates. I just think that this Mavericks team, you know, they're more experienced than they were last year. They got that playoff experience against a really solid team. And I think Luka is going to elevate his game to another level. Hopefully KP steps it up in the playoffs. And I'm excited to see how guys like Tim Hardaway Jr. and Josh Richardson play, because I want to see them step it up. You know,
I want to see. Yeah, I really just give it to roster construction, honestly. That's why I'm seeing the Denver Nuggets. I just think their roster is constructed better based off of injuries, even though Jamal Murray's out.
I also think Jamal Murray is just, I think that last year he was the engine for the Nuggets in the playoffs, not Jokic. So I think they're going to really miss that fire and that energy that Murray brought to them. And I think that the playoffs is really going to be where they're going to miss him the most.
Yeah, I mean, I could see it really going either way, but we'll just have to agree to disagree here.
Yeah.
I think
we could definitely agree, though, that it's going to be a fire series.
Yes, absolutely.
All right.
So let's move on to the East. Starting with the play-in tournament, you have the Boston Celtics versus the Charlotte Hornets. I mean, that'll be fun, but I think it's pretty obvious which way that lands.
The Hornets.
Yeah, I mean, the Hornets, no doubt. I mean, LaMelo Ball is probably going to put up about 50, 25, 25. 50 assists, 25 steals, 25 blocks.
I genuinely think the Hornets are going to win this one. I think that the Celtics are slacking, bro. Like, I think that it's one game, and I think that the Hornets with LaMelo Ball, they just look like they want it more, you know? I think that he's going to be able to energize his team. They got Terry Rozier, obviously. They got Miles Bridges. They're young. They're fast-paced. They play a lot in transition. And I think that the Celtics, you know, they're shaky. They can get caught in an off day and just look like a terrible team. Mind you, this is a team that lost to the Oklahoma City Thunder. That was a team that lost like 15 games in a row.
Yeah, I definitely think that they could get caught off guard. I mean, the part of that Hornets winning would, I think, be Gordon Hayward coming back. And 2 days ago, he was cleared for weight-bearing work. So that probably means he's most likely not available for a playing game. But he probably wants to try and make that push for his team. So I could, again, like you said, see it going either way. If this were a full series, like a 7-game series, no doubt I'd give this to Boston. But it's only 3 games, and the Hornets only have to win 2 of them. Or it's only 2 games, sorry. It's only 2 games. The Hornets just have to win them both. So,
is it still 2 games? I know that's how they did it last year, but I thought it was just 1 now. I thought they shortened it to just 1.
Is it?
Regardless, I think the point still stands in that the Celtics are an incredibly streaky team, and on some nights they look like, you know, a championship contender, and on some nights they look like one of the worst teams you've ever seen. So I think if the Hornets catch them at the right time and play with the right intensity, I think that they could win this one.
Yeah, I think this would be one of those upset matches, very possibly. I think I see the 60-40 leaning towards the Celtics just because of their roster construction, but I would have no doubt, or I wouldn't be shocked if the Hornets were able to steal this one.
Definitely.
So moving on to the next matchup.
Is a little bit more clear cut. The Wizards at the 9th seed versus the Pacers at the 10th seed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You got to give this one to the Pacers. I mean, Caris LeVert has just been incredible. I think he's been averaging a triple-double, actually. He's been just insane. You know, you got a guy like Domantas Sabonis, who's recently come back, and he's been a threat.
I can't even tell. Are you serious?
What?
You think the Pacers are going to win?
No, I'm kidding. Sorry.
I was like, whoa, this guy's kind of going. No, okay. I think this one's pretty clear. We don't have to talk about it that much. Wizards are one of the hottest teams in the NBA. Russ is back. I think missing Beal is obviously going to hurt, but I still think Russ is going to be able to propel this team.
Yeah, I do think that the Wizards win this one, but I don't want to ever count out Domantas Sabonis, like, and Caris LeVert, you know. Caris LeVert's a young guy, but Domantas Sabonis is the anchor of that team.
Don't forget about Malcolm Brogdon, too.
Yeah, Malcolm Brogdon's there. I mean, even though he isn't an offensive threat, really, you still have Miles Turner. So
I don't think he'll be back in time for the
play. You don't think he'll be back in time? I thought maybe he'd be back.
Maybe, but it's a big question mark, though. So I doubt it, but I doubt it.
So going on to the next interesting matchup, you would actually have the Boston Celtics versus the Washington Wizards. And I think that would be really interesting to see. What are your initial thoughts?
Yeah, that one I think is just like, I think the Celtics take that one, to be honest. Like, I think if the Wizards had Beal, then I think that would be a much more competitive game, and I might be leaning toward the Wizards. But I think the lack of Beal just means that the star power of the Celtics, like, you just need one of the three to go off. You just need one of Kemba, Brown, or Tatum to go off.
Long is Bradley Beal out for?
I mean, it's a big question mark, but people are worried that he might be out for the rest of the season.
Okay, so well, and assuming he is out, then yeah, I think I also give that to the Celtics. Even if he isn't out, although it's really competitive, I still have to give it to the Celtics because just give Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, Kemba Walker. I mean, all three of those guys can get you a bucket.
And then another like flamethrower, like Evan Fournier, you know, he could just catch fire. Mm-hmm. But like Nesmith and Peyton Pritchard, like those are two guys who
can Tristan also- Thompson, one of the best ball handlers in the league. anyway, next matchup, you would actually have the Charlotte Hornets. No, the Charlotte Hornets, I apologize. The Charlotte Hornets would take the 7th seed. So then it again would be the Boston Celtics versus the Sixers.
I think this is actually the inverse of what happened last year. I think that the Sixers would deal with the Celtics pretty handedly. I don't think anyone on the Celtics can guard Embiid. I think he's going to be enjoying the barbecue chicken. That is Luke Kornet and Tristan Thompson in the front court.
He really looked like Shaq in there.
Honestly, he's going to be putting up crazy numbers that series.
Yeah, he will. I think this is a five-game series as well.
Five games, maybe six if Tatum has like a ridiculous performance like he's shown he's able to this season. But yeah, I don't think this is particularly.
With the next matchup, no matter how much I love LaMelo Ball and the Brooklyn Nets versus the Charlotte Hornets, I think this is a sweep.
Yeah, nothing more to say there. I think Harden will be back, and you got KD, Kyrie, and Harden fire on all cylinders. No, not much more you need to say there.
I think the Hornets' only odds of winning a game are, knock on wood, Kevin Durant re-injuring himself.
Or just Terry Rozier going for like 50.
Scary Terry.
Yeah, something like that. But no way this goes more than five.
Yeah. I don't see it going more than four. I really don't see a scenario in which the Hornets win a game against this team. I think
their upsets happen, you know, like random close games. Like I think back to 2019, the Raptors dropping a game to the Orlando Magic off of like, what was it?
The Bucks dropped a game to the Orlando Magic in the bubble.
Exactly. Like sometimes these just like random fluke games happen. So I could see five games, but this is not a series that is going to be competitive.
Yeah. And then a team that is out for revenge would be the Milwaukee Bucks versus the Miami Heat.
Yeah, I think this one is going to be this, just like you said, this is going to be a revenge series. I think the Bucks, I'm super hot on them. I think they're going to actually go all the way to the finals. I think they're going to unlock their, I think that I don't think that the Heat are going to be able to abuse Giannis anymore like that. He's been shown he's now willing to take those jump shots and he's making them. And I think that Jrue Holiday is going to be big for them in the playoffs. So
yeah, I was going to say, even if he isn't making those jump shots, he still has more guys to rely on now than he ever did before, because now Giannis has a guy to pass out to in the corner, like PJ Tucker, a guy who he can rely on to get a bucket, and Jrue Holiday and Chris Middleton. So aside from Giannis running into the paint when he does, you still have to worry about three other guys on the floor who can score a three-pointer or get him a bucket. But then you also have to now worry about Giannis possibly pulling up a shot, because, I mean, it really depends on how he feels that game.
And the Heat are another one of those teams in the same boat as the Celtics in that they're really streaky, you know. They can be really hot and look like the team that went to the finals last year, but they can also be really cold and play super sloppy basketball. So I think that the Bucks are the way more consistent team. They have better star power. They're just better overall. And I just think that they're going to take this series in like six.
And by no means do I think the Miami Heat are a fluke team, like a lot of people have been saying throughout this regular season, but I do think that it's an unfortunate matchup for them in the sense that the Bucks have really just stepped it up from last year. And I think they really just learn from their mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
So going up to the next matchup, I think this is also a very high viewership matchup. The New York Knicks versus the Atlanta Hawks.
Yeah, I think that the Knicks take this.
Yeah, me too, which is really exciting to think about.
Right.
Because that means you have a Knicks-Nets second round. But
that would be fire.
Focusing on this round, what makes you think the Atlanta Hawks don't beat up the Knicks, or at least just pass them?
Well, they don't have Julius Randle, that's why. Julius Randle's an all-NBA player. Like, he is so good. He's been shown he's able to make those big-time shots. RJ Barrett has really stepped it up so much this season. They have role players who just can step up to the moment. You know, we saw Reggie Bullock today playing incredible against a very solid Clippers team. And this team is just so gritty on defense. And I think it's that defense that's going to cause a lot of problems for the Hawks, who are really an offensive team, you know, with guys like Trae Young, Bogdan Bogdanovic, like John Collins, these sorts of players.
Yeah, another problem with that team is you have guys like Trae Young who rely on a lot of flops or getting to the line. And even though, you know, I dislike that type of play, you still got to give it to him. That's his game, and he thrives off of it. Those calls aren't given to you as much in the playoffs. You really don't get those because it's big boy time. Even though the NBA has turned into a soft league, even the playoffs, they'll still give you stupid calls half of the time. But half of the time is not half of the time is enough to change a game.
Mm.
So I still give this to the Knicks. Like you said, Julius Randle is incredible, and it's unfortunate he isn't a Laker.
Rose, man, like that dude played great today, and yeah. I think he's going to be a big asset for them in the playoffs because he's been there before. You know, he's that veteran who's seen a thing or two in the playoffs, and I don't think that the Hawks, just off the top of my head, have a guy like that.
Gallinari.
You know, like, I don't think Gallinari and Rose are really in the same boat. You know?
I mean, on the Nuggets, Gallinari did have some runs.
Sure, but he was not the, like, primary factor.
He wasn't Rose the man.
Like, to carry his team and push them. So he'll bring that energy, and he'll have that experience in the locker room.
Yeah, I think that sums up the first round.
I must say, though, I can't wait for this first round. I think there are so many great matchups. And with more and more fans coming back to their arenas, I think that this is going to be really...
I did think of another player on the Hawks who has experience, Lou Will.
But I mean...
And also Clint Capella. They do have some of those guys, man.
Sure, but okay, is Clint Capella going to be in the same... I mean, what I'm trying to say is, I guess to reformulate it. Like, no one has that guy who on the Hawks who really propelled their team and was the primary force propelling their team through the playoffs. You know, I think that brings a different sort of mindset, different sort of mentality to a player and to a team. And so I think that the fact that the Knicks have that guy in Rose is going to really be helpful for them.
Yeah, I'd agree. I just think maybe of all the guys in that team, Lou Will does have a little bit of that because he still has been the man on his team sometimes.
I disagree with that. I don't think Lou Will has.
He's never been the man, but there are moments where he is the man.
I don't think so.
They've
just like, when I'm just trying to think of Lou Will's career, like obviously he's been on these Clipper teams. He was
Sixers, Lakers.
I mean, those teams weren't like competing in the playoffs though, you know?
Yeah, I see what you mean. But anyway, moving on, I wanted to talk a little bit about the Mavericks and their struggles because we were talking about them earlier in this round, and I said we'd loop back to them. So, obviously, like I said, KP has not been what people wanted from him, and it's not that Steve Nash, Dirk Nowitzki duo that people like thought it would be the second coming up. If you're Mark Cuban, what do you look for to fix this?
I just think you look for what you always look for with Luka: shooters and defense. I think that they did get a little bit of that with Josh Richardson in terms of the defense and with trading Seth Curry. But you just need to look for more and more of that, you know? Like, more shooters are always going to be good with Luka. He's always going to find open shooters. So you just need to find guys who are going to be able to knock those shots down. And defense, you know? I remember in the playoffs last year, like, that was their biggest weakness. They just couldn't guard anything. And while they're better this year, you would still like to see them improve on that end. And maybe it's time you just say, hey, this KP thing, it's not working out. Let's ship him while he still has some value and get another piece to surround Luka with and try and
even get so, his value is still at an all-time low. So, I mean, I don't really know how much you can really get for a guy like KP right now. What team is taking a chance on him that is in a contending spot or has a guy that they can give you who has value to this team?
I can't think of specific packages, but KP, he's still a valuable player. Like, obviously, he's on a very bloated contract, and he's not what he used to be, and he's very injury-prone. I'm not doing a good job of selling him right here, but he can still provide some value, you know? Like, he's still a seven-foot guy, tremendous, like 7'3", I think actually.
7'3", yeah.
But he's still the 7'3 guy who can shoot from anywhere on the court, provide shot blocking and decent defense. So who knows, you know? I think there's always
KP to New York. They'll never back to New York.
I was thinking of that, but then I just like that was
like, it's like welcome back.
It's like Dwight Howard coming back to LA.
Yeah, Dwight Howard probably wouldn't be too happy with that. I mean, after what happened, but
right.
Again, moving on, let's talk about Zion and B.I. out for the rest of the season, potentially. Zion Williamson broke his finger, and B.I. got an MRI on his ankle. I think it's an ankle sprain. So how do you feel about the odds of the Pelicans even making any noise or climbing to this, the play-in tournament?
Well, honestly, I would have really liked to see the Pelicans in the play-in tournament over the Spurs if Zion or even B.I. was there. But with them missing potentially the rest of the season, I think that this team is pretty meh. You know, I don't want to see them. I don't particularly want to watch any Pelicans games. I think without their primary scores and star power, they're just like a middling team. And so I think that their best bet is just to keep losing and for Lonzo to keep balling out so he can get his bag in the off season.
Yeah, where do you think Lonzo goes?
I don't know. I think some team is just going to lob him a lot of money. I've heard his name in talks to New York or
Chicago. Yeah, I was going to say New York. I think Chicago, honestly, is probably his best fit. because they need somebody who can provide off ball for Zach LaVine and can play that really good, I guess, backcourt defense, which Zach LaVine lacks in.
And just a ball handler and facilitator.
That's what I mean. So somebody who's going to facilitate for Zach LaVine and Vucevic, because Vucevic does facilitate. He has that ability, but giving somebody else the ball and allowing Vucevic to roll to the rim is going to make his life so much easier.
Yeah.
But again, if he goes to the Knicks, that you have the same thing in Julius Randle. It makes his life easier. He isn't the facilitator anymore, even though he can be.
And I think he fits their team identity of defense. You know, we know Lonzo's a great defender. We know he's a disruptor. And I think if he goes to either of those teams, he's obviously going to get a big contract, like 20 plus million. And the Pelicans obviously wouldn't match that because Lonzo is restricted. But I think he would just elevate those teams a lot. You know, he is a very valuable player.
If you're the Pelicans and Lonzo's offered a bag of 20 plus million, do you use his bird rights?
I'm not sure, honestly. Like, I don't know what direction the Pelicans want to go in. Like, they still are keeping Steven Adams. And just this team can feel a little directionless at times. So I would have to see how they do in the lottery, you know?
That's really what I feel the issues with this team. Like you said, they're just directionless. I mean, do they keep Lonzo Ball? Do they not? Do they trade Steven Adams? I mean, as of right now, if they were to get rid of Lonzo Ball, they'd be a very large, clunky team without any shooting or passing.
Yeah, like, so they're confusing me. Like, they got Eric Bledsoe for some reason, which just really boggled my mind. Like, I don't understand why they got Eric Bledsoe. You know, he just is taking time. He's taking time away from the younger players. He's not providing much of anything, and he's not making the team that much better. So I don't know why they made that move.
Yeah, that doesn't help, especially when you have a guy like Zion Williamson who is playing the Smoothie King Arena, and he's looking over at Madison Square Garden going, you know, those fans over there look pretty appetizing.
Whoa.
Appealing is a better word than appetizing in that situation.
Of course Zion would say appetizing.
Yeah.
But yeah, no. I think the only reason Zion would stay in New Orleans is because of the gumbo. You know? They got some good food down there.
Mardi Gras.
Exactly. We saw how those photos of Zion looking kind of chunky.
Yes. Too much gumbo, like you said. Anyway, I think this is a great place to wrap up.
Yep.
Yes.
Another great episode. We'll have to see how the Lakers and Suns game goes. And yeah, thank you all for listening, and we'll see you all next week.
Yeah, we'll get back to you about the losers tournament.
Definitely. All right. Bye-bye.